When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Dwayne's World with Dwayne Russell.
Well, great to have you company for Dwayne's World. Another massive couple of hours of Midday Madness just gone. We took a record amount of calls on Monday, 50 calls on Monday, only the 44 today, so a bit slack by me, but I apologise. Would have liked to have got more of you to air, but we did take every caller that called up today. So we'll do it again Monday for Midday Madness, so make sure you put that number in your phone. 1-300-736-736, the open line number. Brought to us by Werribee Kia. Werribee Kia always make buying cars easy. Let's talk some more footy. Dermot Brereton's been good enough to join me, AFL Nation commentator. Thanks to rjsanderson.com.au, personal and business tax experts. Five-time day, five-time night superstar. And the draw magnet, Derm, you played in the original draw between Collingwood and Essendon on Anzac Day. And I understand you're back lecturing Collingwood on what it was like to play in a draw this week.
Good afternoon, Dwayne. Oh, don't you forgot one of the accolades. I'm
What's
also
that?
Call number 45 today.
Yes, you are. Good of you to call through and have a chat to us. Well, most of the callers have been calling through on their thoughts on the draw. Are you a draw guy or an extra time guy?
No, I'm a let the draw stand. I can understand why we do it. We've changed around in finals, the final series, to make sure we get a result that stands and leads us into the following week, or on the grand final day, the decree has been made. I can understand that because there's a time element to it. But just like, I mean, I know it's a lot lesser scoring, but they don't go straight to extra time in weekend rounds of matches in English Premier League. So, yeah, I think we sort of just leave it as a majestic, brilliant display of sport that two teams were able to duke it out for 2.5 hours and neither could say they were better and neither of the two teams was inferior. So I reckon it's a wonderful part of our game that we can do that.
Yeah, I like it too, so I'm keeping it if it's my decision as well. What did you tell Collingwood's players this week? Did you have a good chat to them? Did you go down and have an official out the front kind of chat, or did you just mingle?
No, I was invited in, as you know, they have their side-by-side meeting once a month, and they invite somebody they feel they deem worthy of coming in and having a chat that they might be able to glean something from. And having played in that first game back in 1995, having been somebody who'd had quite a great deal of success, and then being able to equate that those types of successful days as to how it stood up, stacked up against an Anzac Day stanza. That was how I talked about it. And I mean, I won't go into the nitty-gritty. I mean, there's certain things. I mean, they were the one who extended me the invitation, so I won't go into some of the things I spoke about because that's, you know, that'd be belying their confidence. But, yeah, it was wonderful to go in there and see them. They were a completely and utterly respectful group of young men. It blew my socks off just how good they were.
If you had to score yesterday on points, would you have a winner out of yesterday?
Well, it sort of bucked the trend. I noticed that, yeah, the Bombers came out, and one thing that's really been assisting them this year is their accurate kicking. And they banged on six majors until they kicked a behind. Thereafter, they doubled up on behinds for every goal they kicked. Collingwood went the other way. Jeez, I almost said Hawthorn. Collingwood went the other way. So that's really benefiting Essendon. But one thing I noticed was, even counting not discounting the fact that they banged on 6-2, I think, 2 in the first quarter. Collingwood finished 1, 2, and 3 better than Essendon. And I was convinced that Essendon had to kick early goals in the last quarter to have a chance. Well, Collingwood got an early one, and I thought, right, they'll probably steamroll them now. And then Essendon kicked the next three, and that gave them that chance to hang in there. Because I thought, notwithstanding the fact that Langford had that late shot, Collingwood then eked away at it and came back once again for the back half of the quarter, was the better team. So full credit to Essendon for just not laying down and thinking that, yeah, this is how the first three have gone. We tire each quarter. They run over us. No, they dug in again. That game said to me yesterday, and I think we've got enough of a body of evidence now to suggest this is a different Essendon team to what we witnessed last year. I mean, so many people saying, oh, look, they're trying to puff their chests out, and the Essendon edge, that's trumped up, it's not real. No, this Essendon is a different outfit to the one we saw last year. They're playing well. Are they the best team in the comp? No, they are not. They still have room for improvement. We'll see how far that can go. But this is different to what transpired last year. They're a very capable team now.
What about Brisbane compared to last year? Did you watch last night? I'm amazed at how they just lack so much chemistry and effort.
Yeah, we did it, you know, you and I in our other lives work for Foxtel, so I was doing the in-house analytical view of that game. And I was always convinced Giants were going to win and win comfortably. And for that reason, I mean, you look at the bodies of work, and teams don't lose their capabilities in a game or two. So last year, I've said it before, that the back half of last year, there were two standout teams in win-loss ratios, and that was Carlton and the Giants. They both won 11-3. The next best, I think, was 9-4. So those two teams were the best teams in the back half of the year. But they just didn't win enough early on to get them into the top four. Otherwise, things might have been a little different. So I thought the two best teams of the comp played last week. One lost a key injury. The other was Carlton were without some very, very good players, mind you. So you deal with what you got on the day. But when you lose a key player such as Sam Taylor, when you're in stride of the game, some teams find it hard to cover that, react to that, and stop the inevitable. Giants weren't able to react to that last week in game. If they're the two best teams, one of them wins. Hmm. And people say, oh, look, they mightn't be as good as we think. No, I still think they're top two teams. So give them a week to actually work out, well, this is no Sam Taylor this week. This is the way we'll train. This is the way we'll set up. You'll do this job. You'll do X, Y, Z. I thought that's enough of a lead-in that they'll sort things out down back. They did. And they were just far superior. Their ball movement caught Brisbane out a bit. Brisbane were without a few. They got a few things wrong. Two things that stood out to me for Brisbane, and that was their inability to be potent forward of the footy. And for the first time, they looked a little one-paced in the midfield. The Giants made them look flat-footed, and I think Dunkley's an awesome player, wonderful player. But he looked flat-footed in there last night. Zorko spent most of the game outside, so they lacked pace in there. Lachie Neal got 21 possessions for 200 metres gained. So he didn't have a great game of taking the ball forward, taking the game on. They played him pretty well. And then Gee McLuggage was probably the only one in the middle with a few wheels as well. And he didn't, although he got the most possessions for them, high 20s, I didn't think he had any great effect on the game. So that was one area. They looked a little one-tracker pace in the middle. And the forward line, I mean, I was working with Jack Revolt last night, and he said, look, if you can't get a two-goal tally out of Eric Hipwood or Danaher, they lose more often than not. So I studied them during the game and bookmarked pieces of play to show Eric was awful again. Six possessions for the game. He had a kick.
So what do they do with Eric? Because he does that occasionally.
Well, he had a kick. He had a kick for goal 30 metres out, and he just pulled it savagely. And so he had one behind for the night. Danaher, I'll get back to Eric. They had one behind for Danaher, and Buckley really outplayed him, outbodied him. Yeah, and Joe had a couple of good moments. But the very first possession he had of the game, he took the mark, 52 out on a 45-degree angle, played on automatically, and what does he do? He runs into the back of the umpire and has to jag his kick somewhere else. It's just unthinking. It's not letting your brain do the talking for you in a football sense. But he had some good moments, but then he... Well, there was one chase where he gave up after three steps on Jack Buckley. It was late in the game. I know it was dead. But if you're the number one key forward, they're looking at you as the kingpin, your teammates, to actually show and lead the way. And it just looked awful. He got brutalised at a stoppage by Kieran Biggs, Briggs, and that ended up in a goal three possessions later. So, his effort wasn't... He probably felt like he's given great effort, but it wasn't there. So your question is, what do they do with Eric? He can be... I'm sure he's trying, but there are moments where the body's looking like it's just... It's not giving everything he's got as a max effort. You know what league foot is like, Dwayne. If you don't give a max effort on every occasion, they gobble you up. They're just too good, the opposition. If the opposition is switched on to the level of what a league footballer should be and you don't give a max effort as a forward, they just take you apart. And there were times that he looked a little flaky last night, Eric. What do they do with him? Well, you've got two, and it's easy to see what Fags is going to do in his presser. He didn't whack them. I reckon he will behind closed doors, but he supported them to the media world. So I'd suggest that he's going to back him in and give him as much time because they do need the two of them up there and firing.
Who wins between the Cats and the Blues?
I think, well, as I said before, I think the two best teams in the comp are Carlton and the Giants. I think the Cats, their ability to set up behind the ball has caught us all a little bit and thinking this might be the year they finally drop away, but they haven't. The one thing I'd say that a lot of people don't mention is that they really do guard themselves behind the footy, and that's because they have the luxury of the key forwards who are just wonderful players and can turn half chances into score. So they can take that luxury of setting up behind the footy so that they don't get exposed on turnover. And they've done that very, very well. I think at the moment I'd have them seeded ranked third. But all things being equal, as I said, I think the two best teams in the comp, Carlton are one of them. I think Carlton win this, and especially without Tom Stewart as that organiser. Put it this way, if Tom Stewart was out there on the whiteboard, you'd be setting up and your instructions would be to negate him. He's not there. So that's a big, big plus for Carlton.
What about tonight, St Kilda? Any chance against Port?
They're a chance. I reckon they're going to be a little bit of one of these teams this year. They've been crueled by the draw. They're going to be one of these teams that are going to win a lot of surprise games and then fall off the perch a little bit. It's going to be one of those holding years, I would say, for them. Ross Lyon has always been a coach that says, I'm an anywhere, anytime coach. We're an anywhere, anytime team for every team he's ever coached. Mm. The noise that came from St Kilda last week was, it's been a hard journey on the road this much with short turnaround times. I've never really heard that from a Ross Lyon-led team. So I think they're probably understanding this semi-young list. They've got a lot of really good young players, but they're young. and they're probably feeling the pinch of this arduous campaign five, six weeks in, and what they've had been asked to do and perform and back up to. So, yeah, it's pretty tough. The Port Adelaide Power are a very, very good team. So I think they should account for them, especially those three midfielders they got are on fire at the moment. But I just cannot get away from seeing some of these St Kilda kids that if they don't feel flat, if they feel good within themselves, they're going to take down a few scalps. And Port Adelaide are that type of scalp that they might be able to take down. I'm a huge rap for Mitchie Owens. I think that boy's, we're going to talk about him in 3 or 5 years' time. We'll be talking about him like in the top half dozen players in the comp. I think he's that good. So, yeah, they've got some real top-end talent. They've probably been hurt early on, not being able to bank a few wins, to choose a few, rest a few at their luxury, at their behest. So that's going to hurt them a little bit by, you know, the end of the season. But, yeah, I think they're going to take a few scalps along the line.
And the last thing on the Toby Green bump before we let you go, your thoughts on whether he should have got a game or not?
You know, I defend Toby to the hilt, but I think in this day and age, it is difficult when you are committed to stop and turn, but you can make a slightly better effort than that. And I, as I said, I'd defend Toby to the hilt. I think he's wonderful. Yeah. But I think they got the right decision. If you're going to want to stamp that out, yeah, they probably got that right.
Derm, I look forward to seeing you at headquarters on the weekend. Thanks for your time.
Good on you, Dwayne. Hey, can I just make mention of one boy at Essendon?
Yep.
We talk about Harley Reid and what he's done for the West Coast Eagles, but you throw in Waterman. It's the first time somebody's won the footy ahead of the ball. Elliot Yeo's chipped in. One lad who's given Essendon, and they talk about the Essendon edge, one lad who has changed their look is the boy Sam Durham. He is going fantastically well. He had a reasonable game yesterday, not his best game, but last week he was superb, and he's been superb for most of this season so far. That boy has done wondrous things for Essendon this season. If you're an Essendon supporter, I'd expect a few more duffel coats with number 22 on them sometime soon.
So now that you've gone down that road, who is more important, the recruiter at a club or your development coaches? Because it seems like Essendon's getting good development out of Durham, good development out of, well, Nick Martin's having a great season, Corbo's playing well. Do you put any credit to the development in clubs getting improvement out of players who go up a level across the summer?
It's a chicken and egg thing here, Dwayne,
isn't
it?
I know.
There's never going to be an answer because the recruiters will look at them and they'll pass over them. And then the mid-year draft of the next year, you can pick up Jai Newcomb, you can pick up Sam Durham, you can pick up Nick Martin, and you'll put him into the club, and the club will say, well, you know what, we've actually developed these boys. Mm. And the recruiter will say, no, I found them, needle in the haystack. And then the development people will say, no, you missed them the first time. So who's right and who's wrong? There's a bit of both at play here. Some boys just aren't developed. I think it shows that we have a very, very imperfect pathway to the top. There are some boys who are robust. Like Jai Newcomb, you'd suggest his body shape, he and Sam Durham, that body shape, you'd suggest that they were ready to play against men as 16, 17-year-olds. But you know what? They weren't. They've turned into big, heavy men, big, powerful men when they turn 20, 21. So that shows that our pathway is quite imperfect. It's probably the best we can deal with, but it is imperfect to find every player that deserves to get there. By the end, I hope they do. The problem with this pathway is, and I know a lot of kids, I've seen a lot of kids who I suspected had league talent, I thought had league talent. By the time they're 19 and they've been passed over, they love their footy, and even though they might still keep playing, they say, uni's more important for me. They train one day a week. It's not enough to excel even though they might have had league talent, and they never get looked at again. These boys like Durham and Nick Martin, they're passed over early on, and at 20 years of age, they still say, no, it's the most important thing in the world to me. I'll keep training like I'm a league footballer, even though I don't have the infrastructure of the training facilities around me. I'm going to train to the point where I want to be a league footballer, even though I'm playing in front of 35 people on a wet, sodden oval on a Saturday afternoon in the second div. It's a huge difference once you get plucked. But, yeah, it's an imperfect world the way we recruit them.
Great to have you, Derm. Always good to chat to you on a Friday, and we'll talk to you next week as well. For RJ Sanderson and Associates, accountants and taxation specialists, take the stress out of tax. Great to have the five-time with us.